But each and every one of us is really in for a treat this evening to learn together with Rav Stein and connecting us a little bit back to Manhattan, something that I think many of us have not been in Manhattan, not been on our campus directly. But Rav Stein being a Rav in Manhattan on our Upper West Side connect us a little bit back to campus in a way that many of our other speakers are not able to. So I wanted, without further ado, I'm going to put Rav Stein there. I just want to mention, as I mentioned before, all the shiurim are l'zecher nishmas, Rabbi and Mrs. Lamb. And again, yashar koch to everybody for joining him. Rabbi Stein, thank you so much for being here with us this evening. I'm going to put you on the spotlight video, but if you'd like, you can put it back into another view. Here we go.
Okay. Yeah. Everyone can hear me? Okay. First of all, thank you, Rabbi Bernstein and Yashar Koach, for inviting me to be with you here tonight. It's truly a privilege during these difficult times. During turbulent and tumultuous times, of course, any kind of consistency that we can generate or normalcy that we can preserve is really a positive and enormously helpful. And therefore, these kinds of regular learning sessions is really such a wonderful thing, not only for the Stern community, but really, as we see from all the people here participating, Stern community and beyond. But many people have their routine. Now we have developed new routines, but our primary routine, or the routine of many, and I include myself in that category, of their day begins with a cup of coffee. And, you know, as Rabbi Schwab once commented, that a person who never saw the Swiss Alps and enjoyed them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, I lost a lover, will have a taina on him, will have a complaint, why didn't you enjoy everything that I gave you to enjoy in this world? I firmly believe anybody who's never had a Danish and a coffee on a Shabbos morning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring us to Din V'Cheshbon for not enjoying everything that he gave us to enjoy here in this world. So many people's routine begins on a daily basis, but certainly on Shabbos as well, begins with a cup of coffee. So I wanted to discuss the practical ways about going about making a cup of coffee on Shabbos, which sounds like a simple matter, but as we're going to see, really touches on numerous malachas of Shabbos and is indeed quite complicated. We're going to begin our tour of the halachas of making coffee on Shabbos with a discussion first of making freshly brewed coffee, which of course is the top of the pyramid, and then we'll make our way down to the coffee of the Hamoinam, perhaps the instant coffee on Shabbos, and we'll see perhaps there are two varieties of that. So if one wants to go about, you know, we're highly optimistic and ambitious, and we want to have, freshly brewed coffee on Shabbos morning. Is that possible to arrange? So perhaps one might have thought that the easiest way of arranging this would be to set everything up on Friday, not have to deal with Shabbos at all, and one could set up his coffee maker to go off on Shabbos morning with a timer that we're accustomed to use. That's, somewhat controversial, but we're accustomed to using timers in many different areas of Hilchos Shabbos. And we assume that if everything was set up, Friday going into Shabbos, that generally speaking, there are certain exceptions to that rule, but generally speaking, most malachas can be permitted if it was set up entirely before Shabbos, assuming it doesn't make a lot of noise or draw attention to itself, So, but if it's something that one could have envisioned was set up on Friday, then one can set up like lights or like air conditioning. So one could set his coffee maker to be on a timer and to go off Shabbos morning, assuming that he put the coffee grinds in and he put all the water in before Shabbos. So can such a thing be permitted? The truth of the matter is a little bit more complicated than setting a lights on a timer or an air conditioner on a timer. And that's because if you have the sheets over here with the Mar Mekaymus, we're not going to read everything inside. It's just kind of, a roadmap of where we're headed. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos and Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph that one is not allowed to leave uncooked food on an open flame going into Shabbos, lest one recognize that the food is not getting cooked fast enough and he might be tempted to raise the flame or to stoke the coals in order that it should, hasten the cooking process. By doing so, one does this on Shabbos, of course, he'll violate the malacha of bishul b'Shabbos, of cooking on Shabbos, by hastening the cooking process, and the malacha of kindling as well, by making the fire bigger, he's violated the malacha of havara, of kindling on Shabbos. So you're not allowed, generally speaking, to leave uncooked food on an open flame going into Shabbos. And even though I did nothing on Shabbos itself, and perhaps even if the flame wasn't on Friday going into Shabbos, I left the uncooked water in the coffee maker and the fire isn't even on. The fire is going to turn on later on, during Shabbos. The Chazon Ish comments that still one might run into a potential problem of the Isser of Shehiya. This is known as leaving uncooked food on an open flame going into Shabbos. Even though I did nothing on Shabbos, and even if the flame wasn't necessarily on, as Shabbos came in, it's only going to turn on later with the timer, because when the situation arises, you know, that I will have that same situation of uncooked food on an open flame on Shabbos. And the Chazon Ish explains that this Iser of Shehiya, of having uncooked food on an open flame on Shabbos, is not really an Iser that's focused on an action, right, that I did in a prohibited fashion on Shabbos, like most of the Malachis, you know, are organized or are, you know, or focused on. Rather, the Iser of Shehiya is one that's created by a situation that the Chazon Ish refers to as an Iser Matzav. Meaning, if I have a situation on Shabbos whereby I have uncooked food on an open flame on Shabbos, it doesn't matter how it got there, even if I did it on Friday, and it doesn't matter that the flame turned on later on Shabbos. In the end of the day, if I have uncooked food on an open flame, I will now, whether, you know, even if I got there in a permitted fashion, but now I have a situation whereby I might be tempted to raise the flame in order that the food should cook faster. So the Iser of Shehiya, or having uncooked food on an open flame on Shabbos, has nothing to do with doing anything on Shabbos. Even if I range it all on Friday, I could still run into a problem with the Iser of Shehiya. I might be tempted to raise the flame in order that the food should cook faster. However, the Chazon Ish is quick to point out that if the flame is a covered flame, then the Gemara says that it can be permitted because the covering over, or blech that is over the flame, will remind me not to stoke the coals and not to raise the fire in order that it should cook faster, because this is something that's unusual on top of the stove. And I'll think to myself, why is this here? It's here to remind me not to stoke the coals and not to raise the flame. So the coffee maker is not, even though its coils underneath the water that's going to heat the water are hidden within the machine, that's not considered to be a covered flame, because the whole purpose of the cover is to remind me. It's something unusual, something extraneous that I think to myself, why is that there? It must be to remind me not to stoke the coals, and that's why it has to be over the fire. When I look at the fire, I think to myself, why is this here? So the fact that the heating element is hidden within the coffee maker, that's not unusual. That's the way coffee makers are made. I won't think anything to myself. So that wouldn't constitute a covered flame. So one could potentially have a problem of Shehiya, even though he set everything up on Friday, because in the end of the day, I'll have a situation Shabbos morning where I'll have uncooked food on an open flame on Shabbos itself. I might be tempted to raise the flame in order that it should cook faster. So, of course, if anyone knows how coffee makers work, I've never seen a coffee maker that has heating, has an ability to adjust the heat. There aren't variable heat levels that one could have in the coffee maker. It usually has one heat. So one degree setting. One can't, even if he would love to, he can't physically raise the heat within the coffee maker. So perhaps that's really the equivalent or in place of a covered flame, because in the end of the day, you can't adjust the flame at all. So that is an argument that's made by Rav Moshe and by Rav Shlomo Zalman. It's quoted over here in the Shmir Shabbos Kochas, that if you have a non-adjustable flame, perhaps that's the equivalent of a covered flame. No purpose of the cover. The black is to remind me not to stoke the coals. And if it's simply impossible, because the element doesn't lend itself to that, to raise the flame, then there really shouldn't be a concern of Shehiya, of having uncooked food on an open flame on Shabbos, because anyway, you can't adjust the flame. So it's really the equivalent of a covered flame. So if one will want to make coffee in this fashion, that is, it seems to be one possibility. Of course, there are potential pitfalls along the way. You have to make sure to put the water up before Shabbos. You have to make sure to put the coffee grains in on Shabbos, before Shabbos. If you'll tamper with it at all, one could potentially encounter a situation of bishul d'oraisa on Shabbos, if he puts the water in on Shabbos, or he puts the coffee grinds on Shabbos, or if he touches and adjusts the timer on Shabbos, he could potentially run into a malacha of bishul on Shabbos. So there certainly are certain risks. But if one does everything correctly, in theory, one could make coffee in this fashion. And even if you'll take the coffee pot out, let's say you're a generous person, you're making coffee for more than one person over here. So even if you'll take the coffee pot out, if you leave your hand on it, then you make sure that the coffee pot remains hot, you can put it back on the flame of the coffee maker and allow, you know, someone else to take a cup of coffee, just like we would return any item to a heating element, as long as it's still hot and it's still in your hand and you had in mind to return it when you took it off. So all of these things, that one is one possibility to set up your coffee timer, you know, coffee maker on a timer to go off Shabbos morning, assuming everything was set up properly and appropriately on Friday. What if a person, though, you know, is not going to be that, be able to plan that far in advance, or he wants to have something, you know, that's a little bit more of a exotic or something that's a little bit more of a sophisticated kind of a coffee, but he also wants to have freshly brewed coffee Shabbos morning. Is there another way to arrange to have a freshly brewed coffee on Shabbos morning? Either they have, you know, like these single serve coffee makers that you can put on the top of your cup, and you pour hot water through the coffee grinds, kind of like a Keurig, right? A single serve coffee, and you put it on the top of the cup, you pour hot water through it, and it cooks, it gets filtered through a filter underneath the coffee grinds, and you have a cup of coffee that way on the below, or through what's a little bit more sophisticated, what's known as the French press. If you see on the bottom of the second sheet, side of the sheet, a picture of a French press, if you don't know what it is, which is where coffee grounds are mixed in a cup, and then with a brew into together with hot water, and then you push the coffee grounds typically to the bottom, and you're able to enjoy a filtered cup of coffee that's above. Can one do these kinds of, or make these kinds of, brew these kinds of coffees on Shabbos? So over here, we're going to have a problem. The obvious issue, of course, would be Bishul. The Mishnah says in Masechta Shabbos, of course, that if one cooks something in a kli rishon on Shabbos, in the same kli where the water was heated in, a kli rishon is the utensil in which the water was heated on. That was the one that was on the fire. If you're cooking a kli rishon, then you'll violate Bishul b'Shabbos d'oraisa. It's not only if you cook in that kli rishon, I'll cook coffee in that pot that was on the fire, even if I pour from a kli rishon on top of something else, according to most of the Rishonim, one could violate the malach of Bishul d'oraisa. So if I pour from a kli rishon, like your typical Shabbosern, or if I have an old-time teapot, and I'll take it over, off the fire and pour it over uncooked coffee grinds, or by the same token, tea leaves on Shabbos, one could, in theory, violate the malach of Bishul d'oraisa. That's a Bishul and a kli rishon, the cooking in the utensil, which was on the fire where the water was cooked the first time. And even if I take it off the fire and I walk around the room, it remains a kli rishon. And even if I pour from the kli rishon, what's known as iroi kli rishon, that's the equivalent of cooking in the kli rishon itself. So you definitely cannot pour hot water directly on these uncooked coffee grinds. However, there is another possibility that's mentioned by the Gemara, that yes, it's cooking in a kli rishon, it's a malacha d'oraisa, but the Gemara says, kli sheni eino mevashel. If it's not in the utensil that was on the fire where the water was cooked, but I take the water and I put it in a secondary utensil, it's known as a kli sheni. That's the first utensil where the water finds itself that was not on the flame, where the water was not cooked. So it's once removed from the fire. A kli sheni, the Gemara says, kli sheni eino mevashel. Kli sheni eino mevashel. Why is kli sheni eino mevashel? If I put cold water in a hot kli sheni, right? I take a mug. Let's say that I have a Shabbos urn, and I take water from the Shabbos urn, and I put it in a mug. That's a kli sheni. The Shabbos urn is a kli rishon, and pouring from there is the equivalent of a kli rishon. But let's say I have a mug where I take the water out of the urn. That's a kli sheni. The Gemara says kli sheni eino mevashel. Why? But if I put cold water in a kli sheni, it will certainly become hot. It will be above the temperature of Bishul b'Shabbos of Yatzar Letters. But why does the Gemara say kli sheni eino mevashel? So Tosfos, more or less, Tosfos has something that's a little bit cryptic. Tosfos asks this question, and the Achrayim, the Or Sameach, explains what Tosfos means to say is that it's because it's ein derech Bishul b'kach. It's not normal to cook in a kli sheni. No one cooks in the mug where you put the water after the Shabbos, or you cook in the pot that's on top of the fire. The normal way is to cook in a kli rishon. You're not going to cook in a kli sheni because the walls of the kli sheni are cold. So why would you bother doing that? It would be useless. It would be a waste of time. You wouldn't cook in a kli sheni. So yes, it's true that the water does become hot in a kli sheni, but since it's not derech Bishul b'kach, it's not the normal way of cooking, so you're not chayiv, or it's not even usher at all on Shabbos to do that. This is similar to the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, if one will cook in the sun, fry an egg in the sun. So at least in theory, there's no iser to do that on Shabbos at all. Why not? But I'm cooking the egg. So Rashi explains, because ein derech Bishul b'kach. It's not normal to cook in the sun. People cook on fires. They typically don't cook in the heat of the sun. So even though the egg clearly does become cooked, that's not Bishul b'Shabbos because it's not the way that it's normally done. So the egg leital, as well as Rabbi Chanan Wasserman explained, that is because as a general rule, one is only chayv on Shabbos for doing things, only us are on Shabbos to do things, or the Torah is only speaking about, when it describes Bishul, the normal way of cooking. If it's not the normal way of cooking, it's simply not what the Torah is speaking about. So too, Bishul b'Shabbos is typically done, the normal way would be in a kli rishon. Kli sheni though, kli sheni in a mevashel. So one could have, in theory, taken water out of the Shabbos and put it in a mug, and then poured it over the uncooked coffee grinds. Because kli sheni eino mevashel. However, the Shulchan Aruch over here, Isaiah, quotes from the Sefer Yireim, that even though kli sheni eino mevashel, typically, you could put cold water in a hot kli sheni, because it's not normal to cook water in a kli sheni, it's only normal to cook water in a kli rishon, in a utensil on the fire. However, the Gemara does say that there are certain items that can be cooked in a kli sheni. For example, the Gemara says salt, at least according to one opinion in the Gemara, where we are careful about this on Shabbos. It's two opinions in Shulchan Aruch too. That one opinion in the Gemara is that salt could be all of our salt, much of our salt at least, is pre-cooked or at least roasted. But the Gemara is talking about raw salt that's never been cooked or roasted. So salt can get cooked, the Gemara says, even in a klisheni. Even though most items are not cooked in a klisheni, the Gemara says that salt is kale habishol. It's more sensitive to cooking, and therefore could even get cooked in a klisheni. The other opinion in the Gemara is that salt is more coarse. It's tougher. It doesn't even get cooked in a klirishin. The Gemara says it's like a stone. It's a rock. So it doesn't even get cooked in a klirishin. And that's one opinion in Shulchan Aruch also. However, the other opinion, and we're chayshish for this lamaisa, is that salt is so, gets easily cooked, it could even get cooked in a klisheni. Because there are some items that get cooked in a klisheni. So the Urayim says, well, I see from here that there are some items that do get cooked in a klisheni, what's known as kaleh habishol. So therefore, the Urayim claims, and this is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that one should not take his challah on Shabbos and put it in a hot soup that's in a klisheni. So if I took out of the soup pot and I poured directly into a soup bowl, and now I want to take my challah and dip it into my soup bowl, the Urayim says you're not supposed to do that because bread is also kaleh habishol and will get easily cooked in your soup. So the Urayim extends the concept that we found in the Gemara by salt, he extends it to bread too. Okay, so the Gemara has it by salt that even though generally the rule is klisheni enu mevasho, salt does get cooked in a klisheni. It's more sensitive. And the Urayim extended this to bread. But what about everything else in the world? Water, the Gemara says explicitly, that's where the Gemara had the rule klisheni enu mevasho. But the Gemara says by salt that salt, at least according to one opinion, can get cooked in a klisheni. The Urayim said we have to be careful about that by bread. Putting bread in soup, because maybe bread could get easily cooked. What about everything else in the world? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes in the Magen Avraham that we have to be afraid that everything else in the world is also, perhaps, mikaleh habishol, gets easily cooked, and therefore you can't even put it in a klisheni, because we don't know what's kaleh habishol and what's not kaleh habishol. That's the opinion of the Magen Avraham. The Chazon Ish says, why do you have such a pessimistic view of the world? You know, why is everything usher until proven mutter? Chazon Ish says, look, we know that the salt gets cooked in a klisheni. We know that, according to the array, and bread is also kaleh habishol. But water, and the Gemara says the same about oil, perhaps other liquids too, are not kaleh habishol. They don't get cooked in a klisheni. So everything else in the world, we don't know what its status is. So the Magen Avraham says, well, then we have to assume it's also until proven mutter. The Chazon Ish says, why do you take such a view of the world, that everything is also until proven mutter? Maybe everything is mutter until proven also. So the Chazon Ish disputes the argument of the Magen Avraham. Why should everything be kaleh habishol just because we don't know its status? The Chazon Ish says maybe everything in the world should not be kaleh habishol because we don't know its status. At the end of the day, the Mishnah Berurah is machmir, like this Magen Avraham, that we have to be afraid that most things are kaleh habishol unless we know otherwise, and therefore you can't really put them in a klisheni. So these uncooked coffee grinds, even if you'll take your hot water out of the Shabbos urn and you'll put it into a klisheni or to a mug, you have to be afraid to put uncooked coffee grinds in the klisheni, because even though generally klisheni and mevasho, there are certain exceptions to that rule. What about, though, a klishlishi? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes him a prima gadim that even though you can't put your bread in your soup bowl, if the soup bowl is a klisheni, because there are exceptions to the rule of klisheni and mevasho, some items do get cooked even in the second, once removed from the fire. But if it's twice removed from the fire, it's a klishlishi. So it's not the mug that I take out of the Shabbos urn. It's now the second mug or second cup. So klishlishi is twice removed from the fire, the third utensil. Again, the first one is the one that was on the fire. The second one is once removed. The third one is twice removed. So the Prima Gadim claims that then even the Urayim would agree that you could put your bread in your soup if the soup is a klishlishi, because klishlishi is not mevasho. So that's why Rav Moshe writes in the Igros Moshe, if you want to make tea on Shabbos, so one possibility about making tea on Shabbos would be to put your tea bag, which of course is uncooked tea leaves, to put it in a klishlishi. Because the Mishnah Berurah, according to the Prima Gadim, that klishlishi, even for those items that do get cooked in a klisheni, they don't get cooked in a klishlishi. The difficulty of Rav Moshe's argument is the Mishnah Berurah has a long dissertation on how to go about making tea on Shabbos. And his conclusion is not to put the tea bag in a klishlishi. In fact, he never even brings that up as a possibility, even though he brings it up in another context. So it sounds like the Mishnah Berurah didn't fully embrace the heter of a klishlishi. And in fact, the whole source for the chumrah of not putting bread in a klisheni, because just like the Gemara says, salt get cooked in a klisheni, perhaps bread does as well, which is the Sefer Yerayim. The Sefer Yerayim says explicitly that klisheni, klishlishi are all the same. And just like some items get cooked in a klisheni, perhaps those same items might get cooked in a kli shlishi as well. So even though Rav Moshe permitted one to make tea, and one could presumably put also these uncooked coffee grinds in a kli shlishi, not everyone would agree with the heter of the kli shlishi. It is somewhat controversial. The Yoram himself doesn't accept it, and he's the whole source for the firm of kli sheni. The Mishnah Brura himself never brings it up. So there are those who do not embrace the heter of kli shlishi, like it seems to be perhaps the opinion of the Mishnah Brura, but Rav Moshe is the one who, those who make tea or coffee in a kli shlishi are relying on Rav Moshe, which is certainly sufficient grounds, to be relied upon. Understanding that there are opinions, that do not agree. Rav Soloveitchik is quoted by Rav Sheft in the Nefesh HaRav that he had a Mesaira. We discussed what is considered to be Kalei Abishal, what's not Kalei Abishal, somewhat unclear. So then because of that unclarity, the Magen Avraham was Machmir and everything, and the Chazon Ish, that perhaps we should be Mekel on everything. So Soloveitchik said he had a Mesaira in his family that tea, maybe coffee also, are not Kalei Habishal. They're not sensitive to getting cooked, and therefore they don't get cooked in a Kli Sheni, so they would make it in a Kli Sheni. Rav Moshe says, he even goes further than the Kli Shlishi. He wants to say perhaps even in a Kli Sheni, because the Gemara says explicitly that spices can be put in a Kli Sheni. Spices are not Kalei Habishal. So Moshe says tea and coffee are like spices. They're there to give flavor to the water. So if the Gemara says spices don't get cooked in a kli sheni, that's not something that's sensitive to becoming cooked, it's not kalei habishal, so then tea and coffee should be included in that category. One could argue that it's not spices. The whole, what is the meat and potatoes of tea and coffee is the tea and the coffee. It's not something that's secondary here, like spices, but it's something that's the ikar. At the same time, we filter it out. So I don't know how important it is. In the end of the day, we're going to take the tea bag and put it in the garbage. We're going to take the coffee grinds and throw them in the garbage. So maybe it is comparable to a spice. However, the Shmuel Shabbos Kilchasa writes that our spices are not the same as their spices. Their spices were more sturdy, were more formidable. Our spices are weak and thin, perhaps, representing the change in generations also. That our spices are a little bit more Kalei Habishal than the spices that were in the times of the Gemara, and it's hard to really draw comparisons from what the Gemara says about spices to the spices that we have in our time. So therefore, we have not generally accepted that argument of Rav Moshe that tea and coffee are like spices. So what emerges is that the Mishnah Brura, perhaps others, don't really seem to embrace completely the heter of kli shlishi, but according to Rav Moshe, who permitted while making tea and coffee in a kli shlishi, one could take uncooked coffee grinds and to put it in a kli shlishi. So perhaps one could take his hot water from a kli shlishi and pour it over uncooked coffee grinds on Shabbos, or to put uncooked coffee grinds in the kli shlishi. That is definitely a possibility. However, in terms of brewing coffee on Shabbos, we have another issue to contend with, and that is the issue of sorting or marakade, which is sifting. Because when you're making this coffee, and if it's a one-serve coffee pod that you're going to put on the top of your cup and pour hot water through it, you're going to end up filtering that water because you want to filter out the coffee grinds. Or in the French press, you're going to end up pushing the coffee grinds towards the bottom. So one has to contend with the issue of sorting and sifting. However, we'll start with the coffee that's the one serve that's on top of the cup. The Gemara says in Masechta the Shabbos that one is allowed to strain wine or water on Shabbos if it's edible in its current form. Even though in the water there might be impurities, even though in the wine there might be sediment, if you would drink it in its current form, you can filter it out. If you would not drink it in its current form, then you cannot filter it. And the reason for this distinction is because sorting or sifting on Shabbos only applies when I'm taking two items that are mixed together and I'm sorting between them. I'm separating between them. However, if I would drink it in its current state, that demonstrates that the sediment and the wine are really one and the same. I would drink it as it is. Or the impurities in the water are both the same item. And I would drink it as it is. For whatever reason now, I don't want to drink it that way. But if, in a pinch, I would drink it that way. So that demonstrates the really one item. That pulls the whole rug out from underneath the serum of sorting and sifting, because the whole premise is that I'm sorting between two separate items, and here it's one item. So therefore, the Gemara says if I would drink the water as it is or the wine as it is, I can filter it on Shabbos. Most of us know this from the Brita filters or the other filters in our homes on Shabbos. If you would drink the water because there's no bugs or because, even with the impurities in the water, then you can filter it on Shabbos. If you would never drink it, no matter how much of a difficulty one is encountering, he's upstairs, he just needs to take a pill and he's in his house and he just wants a cup of water, he would go downstairs to get the filtered water, he wouldn't drink the tap water, then you cannot filter the water on Shabbos. It's only someone who would drink it in a pinch. Because for you, obviously they are two separate items, and therefore you can't sort and see, you can't filter the water on Shabbos. So over here, also, because of this, though, if you would drink it as it is, you can filter it on Shabbos. So based on this, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, if you flip to the other side of the page, that if one has water, which is clear water, and he would drink it as it is, he can pour it over wine sediment, or for our purposes, pour it over uncooked coffee grinds on Shabbos, even though there's a filter that's beneath it, assuming that he set it up before Shabbos, he put the coffee grinds in the filter, and then he places it on top of his cup, that he can do on Shabbos, and he pours clear water. The water is entirely clear. He pours it through the filter on Shabbos, the water will sink down below, and the coffee grinds will remain above. Because in the end of the day, what did he do? He filtered this water. The water was drinkable before. And even though it went through the coffee grinds, or the Shulchan Aruch's example, which is the wine sediment, and it acquired flavor from the wine sediment, it wasn't there long enough to be to constitute a mixture, which I'm then sorting and sifting between them. It just passes through and acquires the flavor. So the Shulchan Aruch says that is allowed, which is completely the same as our example of the coffee grinds that are in a filter that I place on top of a cup, and I pour my hot water from a kli shlishi to avoid the issur of bishul. I pour it through there into the cup, and it will brew in those a few seconds that it's passing through the coffee, and then I'll have that kind of single-serve coffee on Shabbos. What is a little bit more complicated, and also, the reward is greater. For most people who use a French press enjoy specifically a French press. It's a little bit more complicated in terms of the Beaurair issue, is the French press. Of course, the water will have to be a kli shlishi, but in a French press, there's a plunger. If you can see in the pictures that are below it, you know what a French press is. There's a, you put a lid on, which has a filter above it. The French press, you take coffee grinds, and I brew it together with hot water in a cup for a few minutes. Then I take a plunger, and I push it down and push the coffee grinds down to the bottom. So that, is a problem of Beurair. In order to allow sorting or sifting on Shabbos, one has to satisfy three requirements. The first is, it is permitted under certain circumstances, but it has to be for immediate consumption. Here, this is for immediate consumption. It has to be that it's not using a utensil. I sorted it with my hand. And it has to be that I took that which I wanted from that which I don't want. Not that I separated that which I don't want from that which I want. So over here with the French press, perhaps there's really two issues that one has to contend with. The first is you're using a utensil to do the sorting and the sifting. So perhaps we can sidestep that issue because of a comment of the Chazon Ish. The Gemara says in Masechtas Shabbos, and it appears in the Shulchan Aruch over here, that let's say I have a mixture of tea and coffee. And this is how they used to make tea, in a chaynik or in a tiyun, it's called in Hebrew. They used to brew leaves, not in tea bags. That's a more modern innovation. They used to brew tea in a big pot. That's why they had teapots. And in the front, there was a filter or a mesh, which would catch the tea leaves before it went into your cup. One can make coffee in that fashion too. That's like a French press. If you don't push the plunger all the way down, I have like a filter sitting over there in the front, and I can pour out of the French press, and it will go through the filter into my cup. So the Gemara already discusses beer, which has sediment that's floating around, and a similar example appears in the Shulchan Aruch, and that is if I have leaves or something mixed in the water, so naturally, because of gravity, the leaves will settle towards the bottom. So if the leaves settle towards the bottom, so then the liquid that is clear on top, it's no issue to pour it out from the top of the utensil, because naturally the sediment or the leaves or the coffee will settle towards the bottom. So the part that's at the top, there's no issue of Beaurair at all. So if one will wait for his French press for all the coffee grinds to settle towards the bottom, he could certainly pour out the coffee that's on top. But even if it hasn't settled towards the bottom yet, that will take some time, and he wants the coffee to brew, so the leaves have to be mixed together, the coffee grinds have to be mixed together with the water. The Chazon Ish said that one is permitted to pour out of this kind of tiyun, this kind of teapot on Shabbos, even though there is a kli here, there is a utensil which is going to filter out the tea leaves from the water, or the coffee grinds from the water. Why? So he says one is allowed to use it on Shabbos. He actually uses a language of efshar, which means maybe it's permitted. So because of that, there are those who felt the Chazon Ish never really meant it when he said this. It's somewhat controversial in Eretz Yisrael within the Poskim. Chazon Ish uses the word efshar. So maybe he didn't really mean you could use such a teapot on Shabbos because it has a filter. It has a mesh in the front that's going to prevent the tea leaves from going out, kind of like a pitcher that has an ice filter that prevents the ice from falling out. So to have the tea leaves from falling out seems to be classic sorting with a utensil, which is always prohibited, even if it's for immediate consumption. However, and one of the biographies of the Stipler in the Orchos Rabbeinu, he quotes there from the Chazon Ish and his wife also, who attested to the fact that the Chazon Ish used to make tea like this on Shabbos every Shabbos. He would pour out of the teapot, even though the leaves and the water were all mixed together. And he felt that that's not considered to be borei b'kli. Why not, though? So the Shmir Shabbos Kochasa quotes in the name of Shlomo Zalman, who explains that it's because it's only borei b'kli, it's only considered to be sorting with a utensil. If sometimes the utensil is used for storage, sometimes the utensil is used for immediate consumption. However, the utensil is designated only for immediate use. The Chazon Ish and Shlomo Zalman also agreed with this, felt the Chiddush, that that's not called borei b'kli. Borei b'kli, you're not allowed to use the utensil for sorting because maybe I mean it for storage. And that's what the issue of borei is really focused on. However, over here, no one has any intention over here for storage to sort between the tea leaves and the tea, you know, and the water of the tea. The whole purpose is always for immediate consumption. And whenever you have a utensil that is designated constantly, always, for immediate consumption, that's not considered to be borei b'kli. So if one will take his French press, similarly, and pour out of it without pushing down the plunger, and we'll go through the filter at the top of the French press, so then that would be the exact same example as the Chazon Ish's teapot, which, according to the Chazon Ish, would be allowed. What about pushing down the plunger? So pushing down the plunger, you have a separate issue. Forget about the fact that it's borei b'kli, and one could argue this utensil is not considered to be sorting with a utensil because it's always for immediate consumption. Here I'm separating that which I don't want from that which I want. And the three rules that one has to satisfy in order to permit sorting on Shabbos is it has to be for immediate consumption. You can't use a utensil. We said over here, this utensil might be an exception to that. But you generally can't use a utensil. And the third is you have to separate that which you want from that which you don't want. Here I'm separating that which I don't want from that which I want. I'm pushing the coffee grinds down to the bottom. However, perhaps over here one could also suggest that if you don't push the plunger all the way down, I push it, let's say, halfway down, then there's a good argument perhaps to permit it, because the Mishnah Berurah quotes in the name of the Taz that if I have soup or I have wine and a fly falls into the soup or the wine, so now at times we take that and we throw it in the garbage. In times of the Taz and the Mishnah Berurah, they would take the fly out and then continue on with the meal. No marash. But how do I go about removing the fly from the soup or from the wine? I'm going to end up taking out that which I don't want from that which I want. That's always prohibited on Shabbos, even though it's for immediate consumption. Even if I'll take the fly out, excuse me, ladies, even if I'll take the fly out with my hands, it would still be a problem of sorting on Shabbos because I'm taking the psoilas from the oichel. So the Taz has a solution. He says, well, let's take some of the oichel together with the fly. I'll take some of the soup, some of the wine together with the fly. Since I didn't separate completely between the psoilas and the oichel, between that which I want and that which I don't want, the mixture is still somewhat preserved over here. I'm taking some psoilas with the oichel. So the Taz felt, and that could be permitted. So too over here. Why is that? Because borei really is separating between, you know, item A and item B. So, but over here, I'm not separating completely between item A and item B. I have a little psoilus that remains. I have a little bit of eichel. I'm sorry, soup and wine that remains together with the fly. So the Taz argued that that should be permitted. So too over here. If I don't push the plunger all the way down, I leave some eichel together with the psoilus. That's like taking out some soup, some wine together with the fly, and maybe therefore one could permit it in that situation. The Chazon Ish might not accept this because he had a different understanding of the Taz, because one could really argue with this Taz, why should that be permitted? Even if you remove, Bayer is not always defined as separating completely between item A and item B. Let's say I have, you know, a group of jelly beans, green and red, that are mixed together. And I like the red jelly beans, I don't like the green. So I take out some of the green. Even if I don't take out all of the green, if I take out some of the green, that's still prohibited because of borei. So over here, even if I didn't completely separate between the two items, item A and item B, one can still violate the malacha of borei. So therefore, the Chazon Ish has an entirely different understanding of this Taz. The Chazon Ish says the reason why you can take the fly out with some soup or wine is because the fly isn't really mixed with the soup or the wine. I see the fly. There's no mixture over here. The premise of borei is that I have two items that are mixed together. There's no mixture here. One is clearly distinguished from the other. So Chazon Ish said, well, if there is an issue of borei at all, it's only in the immediate vicinity of the fly within the soup or the wine, not the rest of the soup or the wine. So if I take out the immediate vicinity of the fly, then I've taken out the entire mixture over here. But if I just push down the plunger, even if I take out a little bit of eichel together with the psoilus, the Chazon Ish would not necessarily be meikel. But at least according to the Mishnah Berurah's version of the Taz, if I'll take, again, water from a kli shlishi and I'll mix it together with the coffee grinds in the French press. So again, the water is a kli shlishi. If I don't push the plunger down at all, I think one could rely on the Chazon Ish. Not everyone accepted this Chazon Ish, but I think one could rely on the Chazon Ish to pour out without pushing the plunger down. And even if he'll want to push the plunger down, if he doesn't push it all the way down, then there is room to be lenient, perhaps, that shouldn't be considered bayar, at least according to the Mishnah Berurah's version of the Taz. There's the room to argue that that should be permitted. One has to be careful not to push the plunger all the way down. If you push it all the way down like you do during the week, you might have a malacha bayra on Shabbos. Some paiskim therefore are not happy with this kind of a kula because it's so easy to perform in the wrong fashion. However, strictly speaking, we have to say the truth. If you won't push it down all the way, then I think that there is room to be lenient to even make your coffee in a French press, provided that the water was a klish lishi. Moving on, though, to down to the lowest rung on the totem pole of making coffee, and that is the instant coffee. So an instant coffee has one great advantage, and that is that it's pre-cooked. It's freeze-dried. So pre-cooked, generally speaking, the Mishnah says in Masechet Shabbos, anything that's cooked before Shabbos, kol shebo b'chamim erev Shabbos, shor nosei b'chamim b'Shabbos. You can cook it again on Shabbos, provided, though, that it's a solid food. So if you have solid food, you can't violate the melacha of bishul again on Shabbos. Doesn't mean you can put it on a flame on Shabbos. There's other concerns, midrabban on there. But you won't violate the melacha of bishul with regards to something, a solid item that's already fully cooked. However, the Shulchan Aruch quotes in the name of Rashi that this is only true with regards to solid foods, because even when they cool down, they remain a cooked item. Liquids, though, some liquids, when they cool down, you can't even tell that they were cooked in the first place. When water was cooked and then it cools down, the cooking is almost entirely unnoticeable. So therefore, Rashi says, when it comes to liquid, even though ain bishul achar bishul, by solid foods, when it comes to liquid, we have to be afraid. Yesh bishul achar bishul. And the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama are chayshesh. They're afraid for the opinion of Rashi. And if liquids, you cannot reheat liquids, as we all know, Shabbos morning, under any circumstances, whatever contraption you heat up food Shabbos morning, you have to make sure that there's no liquid there. Because when it comes to liquids, we are afraid that there is cooking, even though the item has already been cooked previously. So, yeah, but over here, the freeze-dried coffee and the sugar that I'm going to put in my coffee is all pre-cooked. So, and that's solid food. Not so fast. The Mishnah Berurah quotes two opinions. How should we view this freeze-dried coffee or the sugar, even though the sugar is previously cooked also? And it seems to be solid food. Yeah, but when it's put into the mixture, it's going to dissolve. And now it's going to become a liquid. So one opinion the Mishnah Berurah is, then we should assess it by the time when it's going to become edible, which is when it's already dissolved in a liquid. So maybe we should view it then and consider it as a liquid. And even though when it comes to solid foods, ain't bishul achar bishul, when it comes to liquid foods, there is bishul achar bishul. So therefore, the Mishnah Berurah says, if you want to make coffee that's already been cooked on Shabbos, or you want to put sugar into a hot cup of water on Shabbos, you shouldn't, he says, put it in a kli rishon. Because maybe we don't view this freeze-dried coffee or the sugar as a solid item. We view it as a liquid item, and liquids, there is cooking after cooking. This is a questionable chumrah, though, because the Mishnah Berurah himself describes or discusses congealed fat. And the Mishnah Berurah says congealed fat, you can heat up Shabbos morning in your permitted fashion on top of your crock pot or non-adjustable hot plate or however you heat up food Shabbos morning. You can heat up congealed fat, not sauce. Sauce is a liquid, but congealed fat, yes, even though it's going to liquefy when it's heated, because we assess it as it is now, like Yishmael, Basher, Husham. We don't foreshadow to what's going to be later. So we assess it as a solid, not as a liquid. Whoa, but why? When it came to the sugar, when it came to the freeze-dried coffee, the Mishnah Berurah said we have to assess it how it's going to become edible, which is in a liquid form. Later on, we don't assess it as it is now. How come when it comes to the congealed fat, the Mishnah Berurah considers it as a solid, not as a liquid? So that's why this chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah is somewhat controversial. Rabbi Avadi Yosef from Tzvi Pesach Frank are willing to be lenient, that if you have a solid item that dissolves in a liquid, we should treat it as a solid. And therefore, there are some who will make freeze-dried coffee with their sugar, put it in the cup, and first, which is the way you're supposed to make instant coffee, and put water from the Shabbos urn, which is a kli rishon, directly onto the freeze-dried coffee and the sugar. But if one will follow the chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah, what he should really do then is put the water in the cup first, and then mix his freeze-dried coffee and his instant coffee and the sugar in afterwards. One last issue with regards to another new type of coffee in the instant coffee genre is Starbucks Via, if you know what that is. Starbucks spent a few years and a lot of money, I assume, developing a microbrew. They're trying to mimic the flavor of freshly brewed coffee in an instant form. So what they created was really an instant coffee where much of it is cooked before, roiv, the majority. A minority is only roasted. It's not cooked. So Starbucks, if you love Starbucks instant coffee, there's a reason for that, because it's different than Maxwell House and Folgers and all these other ones. Part of it is only roasted, and they micro grind it so small that it just dissolves in your coffee. You don't even realize it. But that was never cooked before. It was roasted, however. So what's the story with cooking something that was already roasted? So that itself is a dispute. It's two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch. And Machlokes Rishonim, if something was cooked, yes, it's true, it can't be cooked again. But if it was only roasted, and then I want to cook it now, so that's a controversial issue. We are machmir on that, but it is somewhat of a doubtful issue. So one should therefore probably take this, if one wants to be cautious, one would make his Starbucks via, not even in a klisheni, he would make it in a klishlishi to avoid all possible issues. One could argue, though, that over here there's a secondary concern which would permit one to make a Starbucks. One sees one making Starbucks via, even in a klishlishi, there's room to argue that it should be permitted. I think one wants to be cautious, make it in a klishlishi, but there is room to argue that it should be permitted because there's another concern here. The microbrew is only a minority, the part that's only roasted, is only a minority in the mixture. The majority has already been cooked. So even though when it comes to bishul, we're usually concerned with even a minority, right? Say I have a big pot of a chicken stew. Most of it is solid, a minority is liquid. We wouldn't reheat that Shabbos morning. However, there is one opinion in Rishonim Sfardim, actually, Paskin this way, Rabbi Avadya Yosef Paskin's like this, and that's the opinion of Rabbeinu Yerucham, that when you have a mixture, we follow the majority. So if the majority is solid food, and the solid food has already been cooked previously, you can reheat it in a permitted fashion, in whatever way that is, Shabbos morning. Even though a minority of it is liquid. Ashkenazim generally don't follow the Rabbeinu Yerucham, and even though a majority is solid food, like a stew or something like that, we would not reheat it Shabbos morning. We are concerned with the minority that's there that is going to be reheated. In fact, Ramosh and the Egel Tal never understood the whole heter of Rabbeinu Yerucham in the first place. Why? Just because I have a majority that's already been cooked, am I not concerned with the minority that can be subject to cooking again? Because when a liquid cools down, you're not allowed to reheat it. So even though we don't generally accept Rabbeinu Yerucham, that is another consideration to mix in over here into your coffee, which is that the majority of this Starbucks via was already cooked. There's a minority that was only roasted. And even the minority that was only roasted, there's already two opinions in Shulchan Aruch, whether there's cooking after roasting. It's cooked already. So what's cooked is usually cooked. You can't cook it again. Yeah, but over here was only roasted. So that's two opinions in Shulchan Aruch. So since the whole thing is totally b'machlokes, there's two issues over here that are converging. It's a room to argue that one could even make the Starbucks via in a kli rishon, but if one wants to be a little bit more cautious, he can make it in a kli shlishi. So the instant coffee, I think you should put, if you want it for chayshish for all of the chumers, you would put your hot water in your kli sheni first, then your instant coffee on top of that. If you want to be a little bit more bold, you can make it even in a kli rishon. I think it's permitted maker adin. But if you have your Starbucks via, if you're a Starbucks person, you got to be careful perhaps to make that in a klishlishi. But I think coffee offers us a wonderful lesson for the time of period that we find ourselves in. Coffee is full of contradictions. Melech Biderman, who's a famous, well-known mashpia in Eretz Yisrael, very popular. So he has a wonderful observation about coffee. He says coffee is full of contradictions. Why? The coffee itself is black. The milk that you mix in with it is white. Coffee is hot, and the milk that you add to it is cold. The coffee is bitter, and the milk that you add to it is sweet. But altogether, it makes the best thing, right? As we said at the beginning, mein olam haba, shtik olam haba is the coffee. But it's full of contradictions. And perhaps it's because this teaches us something about life. And that is that the world that we live in is full of contradictions. The Rambam begins, Hilchos Aveilus, the laws of mourning, with this shiur is a memory of Dr. Lim. It begins the laws of mourning by saying, just like we have 7 days of mourning, we also have 7 days of Sheva Brachos when a couple gets married. What a horrible way to begin Hilchos mourning. Hilchos, by the way, the 7 days of Avelos are similar to the 7 days of Sheva Brachos. What does one have to do with the other? Perhaps the Rambam is teaching us that we, as individuals, have to mitigate. We have to, or we not mitigate, but we have to struggle between these two kinds of emotions that we deal with. We have to navigate between them, between the Avelos and between the Simcha of a Sheva Brachos. In fact, in last week's parsha, the chatzotos, the trumpets that Klal Yisrael blew at during specific times, were at these two polar opposites. We find the chatzotos. The one time the chatzotos is kisavo mochama baaretzchem alatzar tareskem. If we're confronted by a mortal enemy, we blow the chatzotos that it's time to go out to war in a time of great distress. But then the pasuk continues ubiyom simchas maadechem rashech chadshechem. We also blow those same chatzotos at times of great happiness on a yontif. So these chatzotos also perhaps encapsulate this lesson that we have to deal with these both extremes, and we have to navigate between, the 7 days of Avelos, the 7 days of Sheva Brachos, the times of war, and perhaps the times of great rejoicing. And this is what being a Jew really is all about. The Gemara says in Shabbos that they wanted to take Sefer Koheles and remove it from Tanakh. because it's full of contradictions. Where? So one example the Gemara says is with regards to laughter. In one place, Kohelet says, Toiv kas mischoik. Better to be angry than to be laughing. Laughing is the worst thing. But then the pasuk says, Schoik amarti mahulo. Shlomo HaMelech praises laughter. So is laughter the worst? Even worse than kas? Or is laughter something that should be praised? Or the pasuk says, Simcha mazu oseh. Shlomo HaMelech machs evek from simcha. Well, what does simcha do? It's a waste of time to be happy. But then he says, V'shibachti anesya simcha. He praised, he elevated simcha. So which is it? So Gemara says it was full of contradictions. The Gemara says, resolves that there were two types of laughter, there's two types of simcha. But before the Gemara got there, the Gemara said they wanted to take the health and throw the whole thing out. It's full of contradictions. Why did they leave it in? So Gemara says they left it in because it begins and it concludes with Divrei Torah. It begins, Ma'yisun la'adam kola malo shayam tachas ha-shemesh. Everything we do underneath the sun is useless and worthless, implying that that which is above the sun, spiritual activities, are purposeful and do have transcendent meaning and sublime purpose. So it begins with Divrei Torah and it concludes, Sof Devar, Kol Neshma, So Kim Yirav, Es Mitzvah, Sof Shemar. So Kohelet also concludes with Divrei Torah. So it begins with Divrei Torah, concludes with Divrei Torah, and therefore it was left in. Why is that a reason to leave it in? It's full of contradictions. Why, just because it begins nicely and ends nicely, did we leave it in despite all the contradictions that are contained within? And perhaps what the Gemara is teaching us is that through Limud HaTorah, through Judaism, through what being a Jew is all about, keeping the mitzvahs, we can navigate between the contradictions of life. Yes, there's positive qualities to laughter and negative qualities to laughter. Being happy can be a positive thing, or ignorance can be a terrible thing, even though it's bliss, right? So there's positives and negatives here. And through Limud HaTorah, through following the mitzvahs, we can navigate between the two things, between the two opposites that we have in life. In Kohelet itself, Shlomo HaMelech, of course, says there's 28 times. There's a time for this and a time for that and a time for this. All of them begin with a lamed, right? There's Eis LaLedes, the Eis LaMus. A time to be born, a time to pass away. Eis LaToyav, Eis LaKor Natua, or Eis LaKroyav, Eis LaTfar. A time to plant, a time to root, a time to tear, a time to sow up. There's four of them that have no lamed. There's Eis Safoid and Eis Rekoid, a time to eulogize and a time to dance. And Eis Melchama and Eis Shalom, a time for war, a time for peace. Why is there no lamed there? So Vilna Gaon explains, because all the other ones don't constantly exist. We're not constantly planting. We're not constantly uprooting. We're not constantly constantly tearing and constantly sowing. There are four of them that exist constantly. Eis Afoid and Eis Rekoy. Depending on a person's perspective, it could either be a time of mourning or a time of dancing. It depends on what your perspective is, but both possibilities exist all the time. Or Eis Melchama, Eis Shalom. A person's attitude is he wants to make machlekes, there's room to make machlekes constantly. A person wants to be a peaceful person, there's room to be peaceful always. Depends on your perspective, it depends on your attitude. And it's through Torah that we can navigate between these polar opposites. And I think that this really encapsulates the situation that we find ourselves in. We're happy, we made it to the end of the year. It's during college or yeshiva college, wherever we find ourselves, but we're disappointed. Probably our summer plans that we had have fallen through. We're excited a little bit about coming to next year and putting this year behind us, but we know the next year will probably not look the way that we hoped either. We'll probably be a very different new normal than we're used to. We're optimistic, about the world and the economy and Yiddishkeit opening up and communally, but at the same time, we're apprehensive about doing that because who knows what the future holds. So we have to navigate our way through this. And perhaps the best way to do that, of course, is following the Torah and the mitzvahs and a last resort, at least a cup of coffee a person has. We have all the contradictions in the coffee, but yes, it tastes tremendous. So with all these contradictions in life that we sense, if we can relax a little bit, have the proper attitude, the proper perspective, drink a little bit more coffee, hopefully we'll make it through.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you, Stein. Thank you. Thank you not only for showing us how and whether we can make our coffee on Shabbos, but also providing us a deep insight into how we should be living our lives and how we should be responding not only to Limud Torah, but also the daily contradictions. Thank you so much. Thank you for being with us. And we look forward to having you back shortly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Stein. Everyone.
Night, everyone. Have a good night.
Night.